So you have like a home office, right, Ben?
That's one thing you can call this tiny little dormer area with a curtain that I sit in, yes.
Yes, but like, are you allowed to decorate it how you want?
As long as my wife approves,
Okay.
yes.
You have anything cool on the walls?
Currently, I have a calendar
A
that
calendar.
is DC, like, or Marvel themed.
Our new sponsor can help you out.
Can they?
Yes. If you go to fathead.com, actually, if you click on the link that is in
Do I see a big picture of you?
If you click on the link that is in the description of this episode and head on over to our new sponsor, fathead.com, you can get yourself some beautiful decals to put on the wall.
Nice.
Yes. They are, high endurance, oh shoot. What's the material? I can't remember.
Polymer, plastic,
They're high endurance
stuff,
plastic.
vinyl.
Vinyl, that's the word, thank you. Yes, they're high endurance vinyl, so they resist, tearing and ripping.
They're made of unstable molecule fabric.
They are self-adhesive. You don't need any special glue to install them. You can get Fat Heads. For those who aren't familiar with Fat Heads, they are beautiful decals that you can use to decorate your walls at home.
They are. I actually have some on my son's walls, and they're very nice, and they've been there for years and
Yes.
have survived his beatings on them. So
You can not only get your favorite superhero characters as Spider-Man, the Avengers, Batman, but you can also get your favorite sports team logos and helmets and sports characters, and they even have animal-themed ones with tiger
they even
stripes.
have the ones that that John would love to have.
My Little Pony.
Yes.
Ah, so.
You get one of Rainbow Dash and one of Starscream and have them battle it out on his wall.
I think he should do that.
You should.
John, if you're listening, which we know you aren't, head on over, click on the link in the description of the episode, and buy yourself a Fat Head today.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak. I'm your host Dave.
And Ben.
And John.
And, hey look, it's the SHS OG again, just like last week. Except this week we have a guest with us, guys. I tricked you, Ben.
You did trick me into interviewing someone for once.
Yes, yes. So, everyone, he's here to talk about his new imprint, Head Shrinker Press. Everyone, welcome Nietzsche to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Ah, no problem.
My pleasure.
So, all right, actually, you know what? Before we get into it, I have to do this. We do our Geek of the Week every week. Our question from last week was, in the golden age of comics, Superman carried a weapon. And
I do remember this question.
Okay, so the question was, what was the weapon and what was it made of?
Ah, man. I'm going to say a kryptonite staff. I don't know. Go ahead,
John.
No, I was going to say a dog, but go ahead. Chris,
how do you carry it and wield a dog exactly? You swing it by the tail? I mean, I don't know how that works.
Yeah, attack? I don't know. Just yelling attack. But
well, you're half right. It was a
it was a dog
not
on a stick.
You, Nietzsche. It was a kryptonite ray gun.
Ah, almost said that.
Seriously.
And it was created, really, in the sense of they wanted to sell toy guns to kids.
Of course.
So they had Superman carried in the comic books. And this was well before they made kryptonite his weakness in the comic book. So they got
so
away
he was
with
immune
it.
To it then because he didn't know he was not supposed to be immune to it yet.
Exactly.
Was he shooting it while smoking? I mean, you know. Just
his Camels, yes. His unfiltered Camels. Yes.
And who was it having effects on? Like, was this, like, using this against Kryptonians or using this against, like, human criminals?
This is the original backstory of the meteor freaks from Smallville.
I guess so.
No. Actually, it's funny. When I read the article, because it was an article, 13 Strange Facts About Superman, it struck me, you know, oh, wow, this is really weird. However, as it was pointed out to me on the internet after I posted the question, it wasn't actually used as a weapon. It had different powers, and it helped him solve crimes and whatnot. So,
so he talked to it?
I don't know. It's just
did he call it sweetness?
So we actually have a winner who did get the answer right, but he said, I'm answering this, but he didn't use it as a weapon. And that was Rudy J. You told me how to say this earlier, John. I mean, Ben.
Vaselic.
Yes. Rudy J. Vaselic. Congratulations. You're our Geek of the Week. Or as Ben likes to say, you're the honorary beard of knowledge.
He only says that when I'm on.
Yes. I only say it when you're on. Cause you came up with it. So.
I see how it is.
All right. So this week's question.
By the way, now you all know his source for his questions. 13 useless,
No. this one's a good one because it's in honor of, everyone knows Jack Kirby's, family was just in the news. They settled out of court with Marvel and Disney, over, you know, creator rights for a lot of the Marvel characters. So the question is, who is the first superhero that Jack Kirby ever worked on that he drew, and who published it at the time? So that's the question of the week. You guys have guesses?
First superhero that Jack Kirby ever worked on? I don't know. I'm going to say Namor is my guess.
No, you're way off. So, okay. So we'll let the fans.
It was a stab in the dark.
We'll let the fans answer it. So, here we are. So Nietzsche, start off by asking, tell us a little bit about Head Shrinker Press.
Thanks, man. Head Shrinkers Press. It's a book that I've been making for probably a couple years now. You know, I started off just kind of writing my own things and I had some other writers and artists working with me on different things. And, you know, I think I set out to actually make one full length story, but so many stories just come out of my head that I'm like, you know what, man, I'm just going to have to do, you know, a book of previews basically of what I'm going to do. So I started this label, probably about a year ago, and I put out Head Shrinkers Press Presents number one. And this just kind of serves as a window into the universe of Head Shrinkers Press. I got a lot of good artists. I got a lot of good writers working with me. And this is just kind of, you know, it's almost, you can't fit it into a book. So I'm almost done with the second issue. I plan on putting a couple more stories, follow-up stories, previews to full-length issues coming out. Actually, I have a pretty full roster for 24, 2015. I got about five titles we're putting out. So, I mean, it's good. It's, you know, I figure the first thing I need to do is kind of introduce the universe. And so that's kind of what Head Shrinkers Press Presents number one does.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It reminds me of like, some of the preview books you see, like Image did a couple of them, I think, where it's four or five different stories in one book to get you an idea of.
Yeah,
what's
I always
coming
love
out.
Those present series. You know, I mean, the Marvel Comics Presents did one, mm-hmm. Dark Horse Presents, and I always love that format. You know what I mean? Like, if you've never read DC, if you've never read Dark Horse, you can always pick one up and just kind of see what they were about. And that's kind of what I wanted to do with this.
Yeah, I would say back in the day, both DC and Marvel used to do that a lot more than they do anymore. Because I remember as a kid, I used to have these, you know, printed books that were small form, you know, like the Archie comic size. But they were these thick books, and it was an anthology of all these different, you know, introductory comic stories, sort of a, you know, to get you into these different characters and offshoot stories.
Yeah, you gotta love anthologies. You never get too bored with the book if you have several different stories. You know,
yeah.
If you don't like one story, there's always the next one.
Absolutely.
So, I see, so you were kind enough to give us a copy of number one, and, you're credited as writing two of the stories in the book.
Yes.
So Landslide, Roots, I'm not going to try to pronounce
Pachamama.
Pachamama. Okay. I said that and these two said, that can't be it.
It's a South American earth god. The story is not necessarily, he's an earth element, Landslide is, and there can be many of these. It's not just one. There can be several. And so what I wanted to start off, I got actually a full length issue in the works, that I plan to release in probably about February. But I want to just kind of give us a backstory of the history of these things. You know, they can be a mountain, they can be a hillside just sitting there, you'll never know, but it's a huge monster that one day, you know, if you disturb it, it rises up and just destroys everything. So I love that concept. I love nature. I love the earth. And that's kind of a character I've been building for a long time. And so, you know, you get these stories, you're like, man, where can I start this story? And so I'm just like, let's start in the past. And so, mm-hmm. And honestly, even in the comics I got going, it takes place back in like, the late 1800s, and it works its way up. And I got a whole timeline I plan on going through with this character. It's a lot of fun to write, man. I love writing this character. There's so much you can do with it. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the Swamp Thing thing. You know what I mean? Like it's almost like a side character. You know what I mean? But it's the setting that gets you. So many stories that revolve around this. So
yeah, it definitely, it seems like something you could lift right out of, some sort of old ancient mythos. It's definitely an interesting, idea, you know, for a character. And it makes it very original, but also sounds like something that could be very plausible part of someone's mythology.
Yeah, and I think that the most appealing part of it is I can explore the other elements in the story. You know what I mean? You always have the fire and the wind and whatnot. I'm like, there's a lot of room for storytelling in this. That's kind of why this is one of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely caught my attention for two reasons. Number one, the art is really good on it. And two, it just wasn't, you know, it's not your typical superhero comic book, comic story, you know? Yeah, and you could definitely do a lot with that, you know?
You're going to find that a lot with Head Shrinkers Press. I don't think I have any actual cliche superheroes as of yet. Not that I'm against it. It's just not come out in our storytelling. And like I said, I got like three or four different writers with me, and it's just, Headshrinker's Press has this haunting feel to it. You know, it's not necessarily a tights and cape kind of book. It's almost a gritty, real, horrific kind of, you know, atmosphere going to it. But, you know, I plan on really stretching out and exploring a lot of different genres, you know, sci-fi, one of my favorites, fantasy, horror, of course, because it's Headshrinker's Press. But, but yeah, there's a couple things I want to really get into. And we have so many things in the pipeline, man. It's grown quicker than myself. I mean, we're growing fast.
So I guess you grew up loving comic books.
Of course. Yeah. Just writing them and drawing them as a kid. You know, that's kind of, I guess, how we all got started as a kid. My first comic book was at an antique flea market. My grandmother actually turned me on to him as a young kid, and I was hooked ever since. But, my writing kind of came a little quicker than my drawing. I just had so many stories building and I needed to get out that, eventually my art actually fell to the wayside, and I started writing more until where I seen these other artists that could just do so much more with my stories than what I could do. And I love to see the interpretations. I love to see someone take my writings and see something different than what I seen and interpret it. I love to see that. So it's a lot of fun collaborating with these people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's, you know, one of the things that, you know, you talk about with, I've talked about with different writers and artists is that, it's definitely cool, though. I guess there's also, you have to find people you like and you trust too to work with.
Exactly. And that's kind of hard. You know, I feel like I really seek these people out. I mean, I'll do a lot of research into an artist before I ever even approach him. You know, I'll look at a lot of stuff. And a lot of times when I have a story, I have a vision. You know what I mean? I hate to use the same artist on every story because it's not different. You almost look like, you know, you're reading the same story over and over. I'd like to, you know, I got a vision usually for a story, a way it's going to flow, a way it's going to look. I even like the black and white. So sometimes, you know, a certain story may not even require color because you're really trying to get this gritty, you know, undertone to the story. So it's, you know, you just got to have a vision for what you want, and eventually you will find an artist that can take care of that.
Cool. So then, you know, you said you worked with a bunch of people and did this anthology. Was that always your plan from the beginning to build a whole company, you know, around this, or?
No, I was very reluctant to do it. I started off really submitting Landslide. That Landslide route's the first one. I actually submitted it to a couple places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you got people that want to edit your story and change things. And I have a vision. You know, I'm a visionary. There's a certain thing that I want it to look in a way I want it to flow. And I guess I'm kind of an impatient perfectionist. I didn't want to wait for it to get picked up. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do this myself. And honestly, I read a lot of other guys, you know, that were small time and got big. And they said, man, start self-publishing. Do it yourself. Learn how it's done. And then that is kind of a skill for when you get, you know, better and bigger. And so that's what I did. And man, it took off. I'm like, I didn't want to self-publish. I was really against it. I wanted to get picked up, but I'm like, if I want to do it, I want to do it right, I'm going to do it myself. And man, I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way. I don't want it to get picked up. I like having a small press the way it works. It's so much fun. I mean, you can do what you want.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and you retain all your creative control. And I guess that's really the key too, you know. You get to decide, the stories that you print and, you know, how it's going to look and the voice for your company. You know?
Yeah, I love that. And you get these visions of, hey man, the cover would look great like this. And if it flowed like this and the pages were laid out like that, mm-hmm. I mean, and only you can do that. I mean, it's, and so that's kind of where, you know, it sold me on. Like, I can do what I want. I can make this look exactly how it is in my head. And I feel like the first issue of Head Shrinkers Press did that. I was so proud of it when it came out. I'm like, man, this is what was in my head for forever. So.
And then, the other story, that you're credited with in the book is Diana the Huntress.
Yes. Well, that's actually a true story. That actually happened in Mexico. And the headline caught me. Now I'm like, I want to do an honor to this actual vigilante that's running the streets of Tijuana, Mexico. Or was it Juarez? It was Juarez, Mexico. I apologize. And doing this. So, and I made this, and I actually planned on doing a series. And I would like to explore a little further and maybe even turn this character into an actual series, but we'll see where she goes. I got a lot of good feedback on that one.
Oh, cool. Cool. Yeah. I mean, it's, it was well written. Grab my attention. And it's again, you know, in a world where, you know, you don't have a lot of, strong female leads in stories, you know, it's definitely something that's needed, I think, you know?
I agree completely. No, I like it. It's a lot of fun to explore too. Cause yeah, I mean, like I said, this is based off an actual character, but this is one of them things that you can take and do so much with just based on, you know, what would she do next? You know, I haven't heard anything else out of headlines about, you know, what happened with her, but you know, that's where my imagination starts running. It's like, you know, what would I do in that case, or what would she do in this case?
So. Right. Right. And then, I just need to ask about, is it lunacy or there's an R in there?
Lunacy.
Lunacy. Okay.
Kind of mix between the moon and crazy lunacy.
Yes, yes. I don't know. This is one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen in a comic book. A guy is on the moon.
I have gotten mixed feedback on that one. A lot of mixed feedback.
Opens the door to a portal full of interdimensional killer clowns.
I kind of thought this was almost like Sliders.
It's an interesting version of Sliders, I guess.
So this was a guest. This was a guest writer, Dominic Archer. He actually he has a site called The Charring Continuum. He's a sci-fi writer. He's a good writer, you know. I'm like, hey, I was like, would you like to try out, you know, a guest spot, you know, in a book I'm putting together? You know, give me just a short one shot script. And this is what he gave me, and I'm like, you know what, I love this. And so I grabbed an awesome penciler, Lee Melton, and he's a good inker. And then I grabbed, J. Primus Dickerson, which is an amazing colorist. I'm like, you know what? Go at it. And this is what they came out with. I loved it. I liked it. You know, some people, like I said, I got mixed feedback. Some people liked it. Some people didn't, but I loved it. I thought it was one of my favorite stories in the book.
Yeah. No, it's, I definitely would recommend if you want to read something different, to go check that out.
yes. Definitely yes. A different story.
Yes. Yeah. And then, and the book is rounded out, right? With, Uprooted.
Uprooted. Yes.
Yes.
So that was actually drawn, penciled, written by Johnny Hinkle. Mm-hmm. Look him up. The guy has this Sam Keith style about him. He's awesome. And then paired up with Marcus Odoms, which his color skills are just amazing as well. And so he actually wrote and did this, and we'd done this years ago, man. Before I even did The Landslide, he had done this with me on a whole different website he used to do called Pulp and Blotter, which was like a group anthology website that's no longer around, but it's kind of where I got my start. And, I carried this with me. You know, he put this in my hands and said, let's do something with it. And I loved the story. I loved the concept. So I kept it with me, and I actually put it in this book. And he actually has a different story coming out in the next issue, which is called Plague. And we plan on doing a full length issue of it. But with him and Marcus Odoms, man, they're incredible together. And you know, anything that they do is golden as far as I'm concerned.
I do find it interesting with that particular one. How the framing for the comic is all
I know tree it's awesome. How, yeah, the roots and whatnot. I love how he does that. That's something rare to find in the person. How he sets up his sequentials to actually tell the story, the way it flows within the story.
And that last image on the last page, it's a little bit of ash added in there. I think
definitely some inspiration there. Yeah,
yeah. He's got the chainsaw on his arm.
Yeah, just well, like Night of the Evil. That's it.
You know,
Army of Darkness or Night of the Evil Dead 2. Oh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Evil Dead 2.
When the trees come to life to take their vengeance, of course they're going to use chainsaws. I mean, come on.
How else would they do it?
Yeah.
Those trees are just ironic like that.
So I think what we've kind of definitely set a picture here is that, Yeah, I mean, it's something very different. You know, all the stories that are in the book, they're not your run-of-mill comics. They're not even your run-of-mill horror comics or dark vigilantes type stories. They're all a little different. They're all a little wacky. So
yeah, a little comic relief, you know.
Yes. So I have to ask, is that a little bit, does it speak a little bit about who you are?
It does. It does. You know, honestly, my writing can be pretty dark, man, but I got a great sense of humor. I love to laugh. And so it's weird that when I write it, it kind of comes out dark, but I feel like my comedy comes through in it as well. So, I mean, I guess it does. It's different and we kind of are going for different. You know, you don't want to repeat what everybody else is doing. So it's good to hear that this is different.
Oh yeah. And in a good way.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Kind of want to see what the tree's going to do next.
So you have this that was released in August. Is that correct?
Correct.
So you have your next plan is to sort of start splintering these things out, I assume.
Issue two will be done in December. And it's about finished. It'll be up and printed by December. And then I probably won't do another Hedgehogger's Press till spring. And so I can work on these other series. It splitters them out. There's, like I said, Plague. It'll be a full length issue. The next issue, Jeff Nelson has a preview to Sons of Yellowstone, which I'm going to do a full length book for Sons of Yellowstone. So yeah, it just kind of, it introduces the reader to what we got going on.
Nice.
Cool. And you know, it's funny. I'm not trying to compare you to a movie that failed technically in the box office.
Here we go.
No, but this is just, it's funny the timing of, you know, me discovering this and having you on the show. And I think how do I say this? Kevin Smith, just came out with the movie Tusk, right?
I have not seen that. I've heard some mixed reviews on that.
Exactly. Okay. There you go. And I'm a big Kevin Smith fan, but I did not go see Tusk. But I listened to a lot of his podcasts and basically I think the story of this movie is he had retired from filmmaking. And then he was doing a podcast with Scott Mosier, who's the producer on Clerks, and they talked about this, story idea and it birthed into him like, ooh, I'd like to make this a movie. And he writes the script and, you know, so many months later, he ends up filming it and making the movie. One of the things he's been saying now on all the podcasts is like, before the movie was released, they actually had already made their money back, from the rights, you know, for distribution in other countries and video on demand and all those kinds of things. So everything was covered for what it cost to make the movie. So anything in the box office basically was gravy. It was gravy at that point. And you know, all these people are saying because it's not doing well in the box office, oh, you failed. You should have never got back in, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no, this was the movie I wanted to make. And I don't care what the critics say. I did this for me. This is my art. This is the story I wanted to tell, you know, and that's basically the point there is don't ever have somebody say, oh, you can't do that. Because then you're just going to stop yourself and you're not going to do what you want to do. And you'll end up making something that it isn't you and you're not proud of, you know, and I thought
good point.
You know, they're great inspiring words, you know. I mean, yes, luckily he made his money back, but even if he didn't, he's still trying to make the point like, no, I had gotten out of making movies because I wasn't doing my art and what I loved.
Right.
And
now his career died the death of a thousand cuts, you know, from the studios and all that sort of stuff. And this is him returning to the spirit of just independent movies that he wants to make. And I think that that's it. We live in a world media wise where you can do that, like, and with this sort of thing as well, it's something that you can put out there and it's, you know, it's going to find an audience.
Exactly.
So many different audiences out there. There is no mainstream audience and to go after it is a little bit of a fallacy. There are so many niches that are there to be filled.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's what I was getting at is, and I think Hedgehogger's Press definitely fills some of those niches, you know, like you're giving us new creative stories, you know, and new ways to look at comic books.
You mean niches to be created.
You know, I think the beauty about independent books, I mean, you got this stuff come out of these people's heads that is raw. You know, I mean, it's uncensored and raw, and it's this is who a person is. You don't have a big corporation behind it. And I think that's the appeal with independent labels.
Yes, definitely. Mm. So, so you said the next book you think will be done in October, out in October, and then
December.
December. Oh, I'm sorry. December.
Edge Fingers Press is in December. Yes.
And then not until, spring for the next one. So,
well, in the meantime, there'll be a couple releases. And the whole reason I'm waiting till spring is just to release those other titles that we're previewing.
Right. So where can, you know, that's another thing. Where can people find the book that they want to buy it?
Man, we're on Amazon Kindle. We're on Indie Planet. You know, paper print on Indie Planet. You can go right to our website, www.headshrinkerspress.com, and order right off there. We got a lot of books coming up every month of this year and into next year. We got some releases. So, you know, okay. Just kind of keep an eye on us.
You're doing the con circuit? And
I would like to. My plans are next year is to at least get the Eastern Seaboard if I can. You know, okay. Hit up a couple big ones. You know, I know that the Cincinnati Comic Con is new, but that's closest for me. I'm sure I'll probably hit up that. And then I would like to go to the Atlanta one as well. But, you know, I got some plans. It's just, it's a long time till then. So I'm hoping I can get everything in print and ready to go.
Right. And next weekend is New York Comic Con.
Yeah.
So, you know, that'd be a good one to hit.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
So actually, you know, so you haven't done it yet. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things though I hear from small press is that, the bigger ones like New York, obviously San Diego and even Dragon Con are harder to hit because of the prices of the tables right now.
Yeah. And that's one of my concerns as well. It's trying to get into the bigger ones, but you know, it's a journey. I'll get in there. I'm determined.
Cool. How about any of the other writers and artists that you've had? Are any of them going to be at any cons coming up or?
You know, Jeff Nelson, the guy who's writing Sons of Yellowstone right now, the guy is determined. He's going to be in some cons, I guarantee it, because he's put his blood, sweat, and tears into this book, and that's all he talks about is having a con. So I know they will be. A couple of the other ones, like, you know, Johnny Hinkle, he's a big artist, so he'll probably be there just, you know, hanging out and doing what he does. But I hope to get a lot of participation in these books and push them, you know, hopefully send them out where they can distribute amongst their regions as well. So
actually, Yellowstone, you had mentioned that earlier in an email, and just again now, obviously that wasn't in Head Shrinkers number one. What is that book? Is it obviously something?
It will be it's almost already finished actually, but we're putting a preview in issue two of Head Shrinkers Press just to kind of prelude to introduce it. It's a story that Jeff Nelson, he wrote years ago, and in the past 2 years, he's been turning it into a book. Mm-hmm. Got some great artists on that as well, and the book's looking really good. I mean, you can go right to our Facebook page and see it or even our website and check it out. But, like I said, he's been putting everything into this book and we're trying to promote that as well. He just actually, signed it up with Head Shrinkers Press. So we're kind of really happy to have that.
Cool. I'll keep my eye out for that then. All right. So let's see. Oh, I can't. How about, let's talk a little bit more about you then. So you said, you know, you got your first comic at a swap meet. Who's some of your favorite characters?
Oh, brother, that's a loaded question. Well, you know, it depends. As a kid or now, because my taste has changed so much.
Let's start.
Well, which character has influenced you to pursue comics into adulthood?
Oh, man. You know, I hate to say Wolverine because everyone loves Wolverine right now, but I loved Wolverine before everybody loved Wolverine. You know what I mean? I had
so you're a Wolverine hipster.
I love him. Well, you know, I don't read him as much now because I feel like it's gone so mainstream and changed. Not that I'm against it. I just, you know, you just kind of get out of it after a while. But no, I was the guy that had the first issue and the first Marvel Comics Presents Wolverine issue. And I loved all that. I think nowadays I do lean more towards independent labels because I just see so much new and fresh stuff coming out of them. I do like Matt Kent. I love what he's doing. Jeff Lemire, I like what he's doing. A lot of the artists you don't really see as much mainstream, but no, independent labels, man, that's kind of what I'm reading. That's kind of what I'm looking for. And, you know, that's where I find my inspiration.
Okay, cool. But, I mean, you still peek into the world of Marvel and DC.
I do. I think Dark Horse is probably one of my favorites right now, too. I love, you know, Dark Horse has always just been really a good brand. But yeah, no, I love I love what they're doing with the Wolverine stuff nowadays. I know that there's a girl. I haven't even gotten into her yet. I'm like, and I heard you guys talking about it earlier, but that's, it does pique my interest. It's like, I wonder what they're doing over there. You know, you want to kind of get back into it, and it's Pandora's box, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious where they're going with this, Death of Wolverine storyline as well. Cause,
I heard they just killed him, you know.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, until they decide to revive him again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the second, third time.
But the thing is, like, I don't know. I've heard different things. I'm not actually reading it, which I probably should be, but I've heard different things, like, cause it's a four part miniseries and I think the third part just came out and, they're not necessarily, you know, they're calling it the Death of Wolverine, but they're not necessarily saying he's going to die. Kind of
genius marketing.
Well, kind of like, you know, they just did over at DC with, Death of the Family in the Batman books, you know, where Joker captured and tortured a bunch of people and, that Batman knows, but he didn't actually kill anyone, but everyone was expecting someone to die in that storyline. And then, I can't think of the writer's name. He pulled a 360 and killed Damien in a different book, but you know, so.
It's the life of comics, man.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, the thing is, too, how many times can you kill off Wolverine and bring people back?
Well, and how can you know when a death is really going to be a death? I mean, there was a point where people did die and stay dead, and that's come and gone. The Superman death sort of killed death for the comics. So what if someone really does want to kill off a character? How would anyone know that it's going to actually take? Like, how is a fan supposed to know how to react to a death of a character anymore when nothing seems permanent?
You
literally have to write "I promise" on the cover.
You have Bendis write it.
Yeah.
Because Bendis likes to kill off characters.
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, they killed Captain America with a gun. He's a human character, killed with a human weapon, and yet somehow he comes around from that.
Because it was actually a gun that put him in like a pocket dimension.
Yeah.
A pocket dimension. You know, the fans are partially to blame for that. I mean, we will buy the final four comics of, you know, Wolverine dying. And then, you know, 3 years later or what, 3 months later when they decide, oh, you know, Wolverine is just too popular. And now that all the price has gone up on eBay of all the comics, oh, we're bringing him back. And the fans will go, oh, yes, yes. And we'll go out and give a big boost to Marvel's bottom line from that. It would take a small independent place to have a popular character to kill them off and let them stay dead and let the universe that they're writing in actually have to handle that, you know, because a big corporation isn't going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, we had, Jeff Sutter on the show and I think he was the one who made the point. Maybe it was someone else, but you know, at this point, these characters are no longer characters. They're,
institutions.
They're institutions. They're property. Yeah. They're these giant institutions within the storytelling that, yeah, they're going to change them and they're going to make little, things here and there, or maybe even kill them off. But at the end of the day, these are flagship properties and they're going to reset them back to the way they were.
It's a franchise.
Yeah. But is that really is that model working is a question I think needs to be asked. Like I think there's going to be a point where people are going to get tired of hearing the same stories about the same characters just rehashed in slightly different forms. That there needs to be new blood introduced every once in a while. And with that, old blood has to go away.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, can you look at what Bruce Timm did with Batman Beyond? I mean, there are a bunch of people that had already died. Yeah, a couple of people are still around, like Superman, whatever, and Batman was really, really old. But can you imagine the storylines that like people like, you know, writing for head shrinkers could come up with? Just like you said, new blood, new ideas that could actually take off from actually killing off the main character.
Exactly. Yeah. The end is really the end.
Yeah. But it's also the beginning of a whole new story. You know, like
kind of like with The Watchmen, I guess it's kind of got that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, people. Me included, joke about Bendis all the time, but that was what he was trying to do in the Ultimates universe, is kill people off, but then try to introduce new characters and new things out of those deaths. You know, and that's, but it, you know, here we are, whatever we are, 70 years after, 75, 80 years after some of these characters started. It's a little too late to start doing it now. That's why Head Shrinker Press is going to fix all this for us.
Well, I will
work. We really admire you for
definitely
that.
Definitely try. No pressure.
No, none at all. None. Just sell millions of copies and make us all happy. That's all we're saying.
Kill all your characters.
That's all we ask.
It's, you know, we're simple people with simple desires.
No, you just want it to be believable, you know. And in real life, when someone dies, it is a travesty. It is permanent, and you know, it does affect your whole world. So you want to kind of see that in the comic as well. You want it to, you know, the death to be as important as it should be.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Because I mean, that's a part of life too. Is death has an impact on us. You know, it makes you change your views. It makes you reevaluate your own life. Maybe change some of your decisions.
It's an influencing factor, and a lot of the heroes in the comics that we know and love were shaped by death.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So to ignore it or to diminish its impact is to lose sight of the roots of the comics and characters that they started to make.
Right. Spider-Man became Spider-Man because Uncle Ben was killed, you know.
Right. And Batman became Batman because his parents were killed when he was young.
But that's what made the story so intriguing is those characters that died never came back. Uncle Ben never came back. And as a reader, I remember thinking like, man, it's heartbreaking. You know, like that really affected me. And I'm like, that's what you're going for as a writer, though. That's what a writer goes for. He wants to, you know, somehow on some level affect you.
Right. So, hey, speaking of Batman, have you been watching Gotham at all? Ichi?
Oh, me? No, you know, I'm sorry. Didn't know you were talking. No, I haven't. That and, I'm sorry, what was the new show on, primetime? Not the Fantastic Four. Shield. I've been wanting to see that and Gotham. I haven't, my wife owns a TV, man. I don't
I can recommend one of those shows.
Yeah, so can I. So far. Yeah.
Well, Agents of Shield is in its second season and it is purely awesome.
Yeah, I've heard that. Everyone that has talked about that says it's awesome, which is big for primetime TV. It's like, yeah, I gotta check it out.
Gotham is, it's interesting. It's sort of, I think a lot of people had some mixed, feelings about it, assuming it was gonna end up being like Law and Order Gotham edition. And given what I saw last week, I haven't watched this week's yet, I kind of wish it was Law & Order Gotham Edition, because that would be a better show than what we have right now.
Well, thanks for the heads up.
Well, how do you do a Batman show without Batman is basically what the question on the table is, and they gave it to us.
I think it's possible for it to be good. No, it can't be Smallville for Batman. That's not what it should be. I think making it into. But I don't think that's the way they should have gone.
Right, but that's the problem. It's Smallville, but without Clark in it. So, you know, all you're getting is all the tertiary characters.
Right, and a helpless kid and who's upset.
Not helpless, man.
Guys, you're boring our guest. He hasn't seen the show.
Oh,
so.
Oh no. Sorry.
Alrighty then. So you're not watching the shows. How about the movies? What was the last superhero movie you saw?
Oh man, Guardians of the Galaxy stomped it. Loved it.
There you go.
Loved it. Groot! Loved him. He reminded me strangely of one of our characters, but I
still
love
him. Oh yeah.
That's odd.
It's weird how that happens. You're like, you're almost blushing in the theater, like, oh. Yeah.
I don't know, maybe you have to contest that. I mean, you have an original character there that they just went and ripped off on you.
Yeah, there you go.
Must have loved the sense of humor, too.
I think that was a good movie, man. That's the first good movie I've seen in a while.
Yes. Well, funnily enough, Groot's humor was rather dark humor.
Yeah, that's true.
Stabbing like 8 guys and then smiling about it.
He was awesome. He was my favorite by far.
Yeah.
If only they'd given him a strap-on chainsaw.
Then you'd be able to, then there'd be copyright.
true. Then Nietzsche would have a case.
Exactly. Or maybe they'll come to him, ask him if they can use that idea, and that's how Nietzsche will fund the next couple of years of his comic.
And then both of them will have to go back to Ash and ask him for his copyright first off.
So actually, speaking of copyright, here's a good question for you, since you're working with all these writers and artists and you're putting together, you know, this company and doing these books. And we talked about Jack Kirby in the beginning of the episode. For those who aren't familiar, basically the whole lawsuit was around the fact that back in the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, when they would hire artists like Jack Kirby to work on this stuff, it was work for hire. So he was paid to do the work with the understanding that anything he did was owned by the company. They got their stipend and they went on their way. Obviously, his family thought he deserved a little bit more after these characters blew up the way they did. And it was settled out of court. So, you know, it's all well and done at this point. But as somebody who's getting into that world, how do you handle those kinds of things with the other creators you work with?
Well, you know, so you got to wear many hats when you're producing. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, doing some legal research was another hat I had to wear, which I hate. You know, I'm not into the legal mumbo jumbo, but I did have to do a little research. There were contracts that have to be signed up, and, you know, it's a two-way street. You know, they always keep their creative ideas. I don't want to steal anyone's creative ideas, mm-hmm. you know, especially with other artists and writers working with me. I just want to help produce them. And so that's where the contracts come into play. You know, you got to get an agreement between the artist and the writer. You both sign off on it and say, you know, this is how we're going to do it. And you work as a team. You know, it's, I hope this takes off one day. I hope that, you know, one day one of these artists that are these writers that are, you know, putting a book in my hands get picked up by a huge label. I mean, that's good for everybody.
Right. Yeah. So in 20 years when we're seeing Uprooted 2 in the theater, we'll know that those guys were taken care of properly.
Yeah. Let's hope. That'd be nice.
You know, Uprooted 1 didn't do so well, but I hear good things about the sequel.
You know, bad publicity is still good publicity.
It's nice to hear you say what you said, though, because it's one of the things that the big companies don't seem to get these days is cooperation usually winds up with more fruits of the labor than... Well, you know,
you gotta think about it though, man. A lot of these companies, they're being run by businessmen. They're not being run by the artists and the writers. And I'm an artist and a writer, and I know how important somebody's characters are. I have my own characters that I write. So I think that's what helps me in this. You know, I think that's what a common ground that we all meet on, you know, working at Hitchhiker's Press is that we're all after the same thing. And it's like, there's not some big greedy businessman behind my label. It's me.
Right.
So you're the greedy businessman.
I'm the greedy businessman.
But that's a sad thing though, because guys like you usually wind up making out better than the businessmen because the world of comics, you know, the world of geeks, we're willing to pay more when you do something cool. And big corporations are just not prone to doing cool things.
Yeah, but I mean, we see through that. As geeks, we're smart. I mean, we can see when something's not real. But when someone produces something from their heart and soul, you see that, you know, like that is good stuff. That is, you know, that is primal. You know, I love it. And that's what builds a fan base. You know, it's something that somebody's producing something, you know, from inside. It's not just for money. It's for the passion.
Yeah.
Yeah. The people who run these corporations and everything, they do what's safe, not what's new and creative, you know, and that's
exactly.
why, that's why we have so much reality TV on TV and
stand it.
Yeah.
It goes back to what Jeremy from CinemaSin said and what I've been harping on is that if the businessmen were geeks, we would have an X-Men, Spider-Man, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy crossover, you know, or you'd at least see like, you know, Thor would be battling the Chitauri and then in the background you'd see Spider-Man swing across the way. And that alone would probably have like doubled their profits. But they're just mm-hmm. too big to do it.
I guess it's a balance.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think it's also a matter of the very few cases are the people that are at the top of the peak making the decisions are close enough to the properties to understand the benefits to know how these things may fit together. They're not, you know. Whereas I'm sure I'm fairly certain the heads of Marvel are comic book geeks and the heads of DC are comic book geeks, but the heads of, you know, Warner Brothers are not, and the heads of Sony are not. Yeah. You know, the people making those decisions at those higher levels are, you know, may have a vested interest in, you know, they may actually care about entertainment, but at the same time, they're worrying about, you know, a very tall house of cards and keeping it from collapsing on them. And so they're going to make safe bets, and they're going to make bets that they can understand and be sure of.
So, listeners, if you'd like to support really good ideas, go buy some Head Shrinkers comics now.
Exactly.
Come on over. Want to see cool stuff.
There you go. I think John said it all.
Thank you very much, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely. I mean, we've said this so many times on this show. It's true, though. I mean, we're definitely for supporting art, you know, and artists and the independents, you know.
And the writers.
Yeah. It's great when someone like Steve Scott or J.G. Jones want to come on this show, and it's like, yeah, we love your work, and you've done a lot of great stuff with Marvel and DC. But it's even better when guys like you come on the show, because it's, you know, you're doing what they really wanted to do, you know, and what they spent a lot of their life striving to get to, and then, you know, they got the lucky shot with DC, but Steve will tell you he prefers going and working on his own stuff, you know. So
and when they do, you usually see really good stuff come out of them. See a lot of these writers go off and do their own side project, and they're usually just golden.
Yes, yeah. So I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, don't worry about being a corporate shill. You know, be your own corporate shill.
Draw it, and they will come.
You know, but DC and Marvel will still interview your people. You know, we love you.
We love everyone equally.
Yes. Jeff Johns, if you're out there listening and you want to come on the show, yeah, we'll love you. We do love you. Come on.
And Stan, you're always welcome.
Jeff Loeb, yeah, Stan, any of you guys, come on. Yeah, we love you too, but we also love the
true artists. You don't have to give them that much love, Dave. They don't listen to our show.
Oh, darn. Wouldn't you be surprised if Stan Lee listened to this?
Hey, you know, something.
Yeah, that's true. He does so to laugh.
Yeah, well, you know, and unfortunately the gentleman is, you know, 91 now, so he might forget it right after he listens, so.
Perhaps.
Oh.
I recommend it.
So.
So anyway.
So, as we're getting near the end here, is there anything else you want to promote?
No, I would just say, you know, come check us out. Just simply log into the site, see what we got going on. If you don't like it, move along. No. Check out what we got. You know, we got a lot coming, man. It's, you know, there's so much in the pipeline. We got so much good things, so many good artists and writers. Give us a chance to entertain you.
Right. It's headshrinkerspress.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, you guys are on the Twitter and the Facebook?
We're on the Twitters and the Facebook and the Tumblr. We are on all the social media, which you can get through all of them through the website. Website's like our hub.
Right. Yes. So definitely, you know, everyone listening, go to headshrinkerspress.com. Check them out. You know, buy that first issue. You will fall in love with Groot with a chainsaw. I'm telling you.
You know, we like to keep them kind of, you know, I'm not out to make $1 million. So, you know, we keep our comics fairly cheap. I mean, we want to get them out there in front of people. So you're not going to be, you know, spend an arm and a leg to get a book. We're fairly reasonable, and we just want to entertain.
Well, the tree spent an arm, but you know, that's.
It was well worth it.
Wait a minute. You charged me $75 for, wait, hold on. What's going on?
It's that businessman hat, man.
Oh, okay. No. He did not charge you $75. But yes, definitely everyone go check them out. And John and Ben, if you don't have anything else to add, I think we can wrap it up there.
I got nothing. I'm satisfied.
You paid me to keep my mouth shut after an hour, so that's okay.
Yes, well, you know, I can't keep giving
you're supposed to, you got that wrong. You're supposed to be paid to shut your mouth for an hour.
I knew there was something wrong with that.
That's why I gave you the bottle of Jack Daniels. I thought it would keep you quiet.
Oh. Where did that go again? Where was it?
So, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, as always, don't let your cape be caught in the door. Have a good week. Speaking of capes, you can tug on ours by joining the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+ at Superhero Speak. If you have any comments on my bad jokes, you can email me at dave@superheroespeak.com.
You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, and various other channels. Or if you'd like to tease the beard of knowledge, you can email me at ben@superheroespeak.com.
We also occasionally rant about things on our website, superheroespeak.com. Or, if you'd like to further discuss the prowess of Rainbow Dash versus anybody in the greater geek universe, you can email me at john@superheroespeak.com.
And don't forget to check out our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. companion show, Agents of Speak, which you can watch live most Tuesdays around 9 p.m. on our Google Plus page, or archived on our YouTube channel. Now let go of our cape.
Superhero Speak promo, take one. Get your promo done.
So do you read comic books? Do you enjoy comic book movies? Well, then you should be listening to Superhero Speak.
What's that, Dave?
It is a weekly podcast where we talk about comic book movies, TV shows, cartoons, and all other things comic book related.
That sounds great. Who hosts it?
Well, I host it.
Oh, I'm out.
We also have Ben. You're one of the hosts.
Oh, you lost me.
Okay. We also have John.
I'll do anything for money.
If John's there, I might show up every once in a while.
And occasionally we have Christopher Walken.
Yeah. Once in a while, when things are rough on the budget, I might step in and help out.
It's a good thing we have that padding in the budget to have him show up every once in a while.
He shows up for Oreos and orange juice. So I don't know.
Have you seen his IMDb page? He needs the work. Really.
The Headless Horseman was a hell of a role. Hell of a role.
If you want a podcast that feels like the conversations that you have in your local comic book shop, then you should check us out on superheroespeak.com, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Podcasters, I'm going to have you redo that entire promo. It wasn't working for me at all.
It was the plaid and the stripes, wasn't it?
Listen, you had an hour at Mood. I don't know what you did with your time.
Mostly slingshotting bow ties.
So, Mr. Gunn, what is your favorite comic book?
Personally, I like The Adventures of Superman because I love that costume. It's so skin tight and it's adequately designed.
Have you ever heard of the Ambiguously Gay Duo?
I have not.
I think you would enjoy them.
Oh, it sounds naughty. David, you rascal.
Oh my gosh.